I want to tell you three main stories today. This first story will be on human aging, and then the second and third stories will be on mouse aging. I got to say, I've had a great time in the last couple of days. I like this. I like the dialogue between the audience and the feedback that comes back. So I decided to put in really experimental stuff. I mean, experimental, like, we've barely just got it done. I mean, this is 1 week old, and the third story is going to be this 1 week old stuff that is just coming off the press. But I wanted to run by you and get some feedback, because we're just beginning to think about how to think about it, and it's complicated. And so I thought you guys would have some good feedback. Okay, so. Let me tell you about what we've been doing with aging. The whole idea was to try to look at aging as a really complicated process, and to use gene arrays to try to look in a highly parallel fashion at many, many things going on at once and see what we can do. Okay, so here's one idea of aging. You can watch Einstein grow old from young man to old man, and that's what we want to do. Is we want to be able to watch the process of aging, but not at the level of a person, and not even at the level of his tissue. So this is a kidney growing old, from a young kidney to an old kidney. So if you know much about kidneys, you can see that this is a healthy artery, a healthy filtering unit called the glomerulus, and a healthy draining unit called the tubule. This is not such a, this is an old kidney. It's not diseased, it's just old. And then the idea is to be able to see aging in terms of molecules. And so all we're going to do is try to define an expression phenotype here. So this is just a molecular phenotype that is, and this is a cellular phenotype, and this is a personal, an organismal phenotype. And I know how to see the difference between this, and with a little training, I'll probably see the difference in that with a microscope. What we want to learn how to do is to try to extract the data and to find genes that can act as good markers for young and old. And so the whole talk is about that. Now, I think this sort of thing has a couple of interesting advantages in that, if I were to get good biomarkers of age, these things tell me genes and pathways, and hence gives me molecular insight as to what's going on. Another advantage of this is that this is quantitative, and I can compare aging in between different tissues or even between different types of organisms. Now, that's not really possible to compare an old kidney to an old liver to an old brain. So if I look at it under a microscope, there's no way I can easily ask if they're really similar or not. And likewise, not very easy to compare an old mouse to an old human and say, is that really similar or not? It's just subjective. Whereas here, it's more objective, and I can just define what fraction of the pattern is common across different tissues and common across different species. Okay? Now, the third part I want to say is that what's good about this is that this could be used as an assay. These are all assays that are done on one person right away. And so this is a molecular assay to see the age of a person or a subject. The other way you could do it is what Arnie presented, which is the demographic way. So you take a whole bunch of people, and then you just wait until they die. And so someplace around here now, on year 80, is when you see the highest mortality rate. Okay, so this is the best way, I guess, but it's awful, because this thing takes 50 years to do in a person, so it's basically impossible. In a worm, you can do it. It takes 2 weeks, but it's still a pain in the neck, a two-week experiment. Mouse, I will argue, a mouse is near impossible, because it takes something like 5 years to do, which is longer than a grant cycle, and it's almost longer than a PhD. So you can't really do practically you can't do mouse lifespan experiments. And so things where we have a biomarker of aging gets us away from a mortality kind of experiment, a lifespan experiment, and into looking and getting results right away. Okay? All right, the next point I want to make is that...
Can you just explain why do we want a biomarker of aging?
Well, so what I just said. So one is I don't have to wait for things to die. So without a biomarker, I can only tell how old you are by taking 100 of your identical twins and asking how much longer do they live. With a biomarker of aging, I can look at you and I can say, you're about something, and then guess how much longer you have to live, okay? Okay. Right, biomarker for physiological age. Okay? This is going to be a gene expression, a molecular biomarker. Okay?
This. Other than age, because you don't have to be present at birth to know the age. And so you can work with some mice that were born last year.
It's not easy to know the age of a mouse until it dies, right? So the papers in mouse aging, you know, they all do the green experiment.
So I was trying to distinguish physiological age,
yes,
from chronological age.
Yes, okay, so let's distinguish that now. So chronological age is the number of years you have lived. Physiological age is your rough physiology, which correlates with how long you lived, but can vary from individual to individuals. So you get healthy individuals and frail individuals, okay? So a biomarker of physiological aging has to see that physiology, and it must deviate from chronological age in the correct direction. Okay, now I want to talk about the red line. So the red line is real life. The green line is... the red line is a wild population. So this is what happens to humans and mice outside of modern society and outside of the lab. So when Mickey talked about the evolution of humans, and the effective population was 10,000 humans in the world. So at that time, when there were 10,000 people in the world, and we were undergoing our evolution, human evolution, and pressure was the highest, our lifespan was... the life expectancy was something like 20 years, maximal 40 years. So all of us guys that are more than 40 years old, we're now sort of like biological machines outside the force of natural selection. Okay? In a mouse, a mouse in the lab can live 2 to 3 years. Mouse in the wild lives less than 1 year. 90% die in the first year. So a 2-year-old mouse is a biological machine that's outside the force of natural selection, okay? So you have to, through the rest of the talk, you just have to think in the back of your mind that all of this stuff out here is biology that's very weird, because you never get to argue either in any direct way that biology or evolution cared about what's going on out here in the green zone, okay?
If that was the case, why isn't it different species actually have different lifespans if you protect them in the mouse colony, for example? Why wouldn't, if evolution didn't act upon lifespan,
yeah,
right, then why doesn't the mouse live for 80? I mean, the mouse actually, even if it lives to 5, right, whatever it is, most mice are gone by 5, and nobody's there at 6. But most humans are there at 60 and one more, right? So something must set the natural lifespan. That would be the green line.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
If it's set, it must be evolution that sets it. It isn't just... I don't know of any other forces that might set natural lifespan. And since that's always species-specific, it almost surely is evolution that sets lifespan.
Well... Okay, but I think we're basically in agreement, but let me just restate what you just stated. So it's absolutely true that the human genome can live longer than the mouse genome, but we have to ask about what could be the evolutionary pressures for this types of events that happen out here. And it's exactly like your fly on your talk, when you talked about the fly crossing and you selected for longer, later and later breeding, and you got longer and longer lifespan. So he selected for the breeding during, as a selection pressure. The aging came along.
Right.
So that's perfectly possible. But he wasn't selecting for aging per se. Nature did not, I don't think, select for aging per se. It's selecting for other stuff. So you could select for fertility. You can select for caloric restriction up here, and that will have an effect out here. You can select for avoiding predators up here, and that too could have, I guess, an effect on longevity.
What he's claiming is that no matter what gene combination you put together in a mouse, you're not going to get an 80-year old mouse. That there isn't an 80-year, I mean, the Bible gave us 80 years, and therefore all organisms live 80 years, and now there's something else happening. I don't think that's true. I think species combination set like that, and it's a bit heretical because I'm saying what Haldane said was not true, which is that traits that happen after you reproduce can be selected for. And I'm saying lifespan is selected, greenhorn is selected in the species. You could protect it all you want. No infectious diseases, no. Nothing happens to that mouse. It's just happy and healthy right up to the end, but it never is going to hit 80, right? Like we
accept that need to exit for, or can it just be a byproduct of other stuff, like the cell cycle is set and the clock ticks or some other
cell cycle is selected, right?
Yes, but then the total age can just
so
be a byproduct.
The total is the sum of all the selections that have happened to give you that age, which give you that camper, right?
So you're talking about correlated selection on other traits. So
well, there was a term I used, an antagonistic pleiotropy, right? That things were good at 2 years of age, right before you stopped breeding, things are good for you, and then they turn bad for you at a certain time afterwards. Same thing, right? But that limits your lifespan. But that's under selection.
The second part is not, so let me just simplify this. Let me just simplify it in the following way. I'm a geneticist. I've studied signaling, and let's consider the cell cycle. In the sense that the cell cycle is selected apart, and I expect the yeast cell cycle and the worm cell cycle and the mouse and human cell cycle to be very, very similar, and the MDM2 P53 is highly conserved because I expect conservation of the cell cycle is so important. That type of argument doesn't make that much sense for this sort of stuff. So if I were to find, whatever, some gene that climbs down, just like cyclin climbs down during the late phase of a cell cycle, I would not expect that to be selected in the same sense that the cell cycle is selected. It could very well, I guess, happen the same between different species, but it has to be a little bit more complicated explanation. That's all I'm trying to say, okay? So cell cycle can, and RAS signaling is under evolutionary pressure. Aging is a little bit different, okay? And I'm going to return that to that point because we're going to do an experiment comparing aging across different species. Okay. So I want to tell you about one human experiment and what we found with that. And so we first thing we did is we looked at aging of the kidney. And the kidney's not a bad organ to look at for aging because it starts to decline in function in most people at year 40. It's a filter, and you can measure how well it filters something. So you measure, it's a good filter at year 40, and then it gets worse and worse. And then we wanted to, we got our hands on 74 normal kidneys from people aged 27 to 92. And so we're just going to watch genes go up and down as the kidney ages. That they could not be. So in fact, these were all kidneys that had been removed from a person for one reason or another. Six of them were kidney donors, so they were perfectly healthy kidneys. They were actually going into somebody else to save them. They were kidney transplants. They're more or less identical, those six. The other ones were damaged kidneys that were being removed for some reason. Typically, there was a tumor in the kidney, and they had to remove the whole kidney. We took a normal section of the kidney far removed from the tumor. But you bring up a very good point, and that has to be taken seriously, is that this is a human experiment, so it cannot be genetically identical, it cannot be grown under standard lab conditions, and you have to deal with the possibility that how we obtained these samples and who we got. And all I want to tell you is that I think we thought about this hard and long. We know a lot of the clinical data from here, and we know where the kidneys came from, and we considered all of those as possible confounders in what I'm about to tell you. And so where they came from and what circumstances they came from doesn't appear to affect what I'm about to tell you, okay? To a great ideal. All right, so the kidney, I forgot to tell you, comes in the outside and the inside part. And so we looked at gene expression changes in the outside called the cortex, and then we looked at gene expression changes in the inside called the medulla. And then we just did a simple affymetrics experiment to look at this. So this is the cortex out here, the outside part. This is where all the filtration occurs. So there's millions of little filtering units called glomeruli out here. Those little filtering units all send in the filtrate to the tubules in here on the inside part called the medulla. Okay? And so we simply now, even though I call it cortex, it's a very complicated structure. It has many different cell types. Same for the medulla. So these are, to rough approximation, this is what we found. So this is a sort of molecular profile of kidney aging. This is the data from the cortex. That's the data from the medulla. There are 447 different genes, each one a different row. So this is a age-regulated gene. Blue is down, yellow is up. And so this gene is starting off blue and going yellow, and they're increasing with age. And these are decreasing with age. Okay, and these are the young person. So this was the 26-year-old, this is the 92-year-old, okay? So in a way, this is what we want to evaluate as a marker for Einstein. So this is the young Einstein and this is the old Einstein, okay? Blue and yellow. All right, so now let's address your question, Boyce, about physiological aging. So notice that there are stripes. So this person right here is got a yellow stripe. So this person is 78 years old. She is, and she, all the way down, has genes that are much more yellow than other people her chronological age. So if you just looked at her genes, you would say, boy, she looks like she should be further to the right, like a 100-year-old. And over here is a person that's 81. He's actually got a pretty blue stripe over here. And blue means that he should have been younger. So this blue striped guy is an 81-year-old who looks like a 40, 50-year-old. All right? So now what we want to do is we want to go back to the people. And we want to look at this lady and look at this guy and say, and we want to look at all of them and we want to say, what do they look like? And compare this stripes to what they look like. Okay?
Are they always reciprocal, like you say, at the bottom when you have yellow and blue?
Yeah.
So that woman is
yeah.
quite yellow for the up. Is it blue for the down?
Yeah. So this yellow line is blue here. There's a big correlation right there. And I think that's kind of interesting to think about, that it's all going as one in the kidney, and that you get so much stripes, all right? I think it's right. So this person here, I'm going to tell you, is physiologically old. And old is yellow and blue.
Yeah.
So she's more yellow up here and more blue down there. Okay?
Is that true for all the matches that you've done?
Yes. So if you look at each different gene and you say, is it more yellow than other people that same age, they tend to co-correlate. Okay? These were selected based only on chronological age. So it's linear regression on chronological age. No, this is only 400 genes out of 20,000. Right, top genes. Okay, and we did enough controls to say that almost all of these, almost none of these can be explained by chance. So most of these, very few of them are false positives.
Is there some similarity in functions among those 400 genes?
There are many, many stories I can tell you about function, about this sort of thing. So if I start telling you about individual genes, then that's the end of it. So I'm not going to tell about hardly any individual genes, once or twice, I think.
I mean, because these are humans and they have certain limits in what you can do, how do you know this isn't something that one group eats and the other group doesn't eat? Or
that one is tough to control for. We did control for what race they are, what sex they are. We controlled for why they were in the hospital, anything else they put down on their clinical records, including the medications they were taking and other things. So old people tend to get, what's probably you're all thinking about, old people tend to get hypertension and diabetes. So this, you might think, is just a diabetes marker. But we know who has diabetes. We know the glucose levels of all these people. So we actually did a specific test, and we said, could glucose level explain this change? And so for diabetes and hypertension and 15 other clinical, the slope of this gene, as I show it, didn't change hardly at all when we included diabetes as a term or hypertension as a term. Okay? We did it for aging, and then we added one term, but 16 times, and asked if that new term changed the aging slope. And looking for cases where the new term was going to change all of this stuff, and we didn't see that. Okay. Now, so I think that's actually pretty good. So this isn't done for most of the things, but you know, we do sit around every single day, and we just say, well, what if it's, you know, what? What, this is the Bay Area, you know, so this could be, you know, this could be the old guys could be the white guys and the young guys could be the Asian guys, right? Because the Bay Area has changed demography. This is Boston, everything's different, you know, this Irish and the, so. What's that?
Could be prune juice.
Prune juice. You know, there was more oranges or something in the Bay Area.
One of the things that really demonstrate changes with age is metabolic activity.
Sure.
And the kidney is pretty sensitive to metabolic activity. I mean, that's why I said food, I bet that the gene expression changes in young people and old people, even if they had the same diet.
Sure. So I'm agnostic as to what is causing these changes for the time being, okay? So it could be what you eat affects what goes into your blood affects the expression in the kidney. And all of this could in fact be caused by how well your heart is working and how well your stomach is, what kind of metabolism you have, okay? I'm going to even be agnostic as to whether this is gene expression or it's changing anatomy of the kidney. Kidney is supposed to be pretty much post-mitotic, so the anatomy is not that different, but there are certain cell types that tend to dwindle out. And so maybe this is specific for a cell type and that it dwindles out. And that is a marker, but it's not a gene expression.
Let me suggest something that might be a cute experiment. So since men age more rapidly than women do, that the Cambrian curves and everything else are different for men and women. If these were true markers of ages, they might be, when you segregate out men and women, you might actually see different rates at which they change. And then women, that would be an internal control if it worked.
Well, we did it, and we did sex as a term. That had almost no effect on any of these genes. So it failed your experiment. So I would have to, but I don't actually know for kidney aging if there's a difference between men and women. There might be, but I frankly don't know. I could, but it's a good idea.
Since you have a large number of genes here, what's the likelihood that at random you would be seeing a group of genes that would have at the bottom.
Okay, so these were selected using a a single gene p-value of 0.001. It's about 20,000 genes on the chip. So out of these 447, that kind of logic says I should have seen 20 by chance. So we think there definitely are false positives on here, but we think there's not that many. We've also done reasonably extensive permutation experiments where, for example, I scramble the age here and then resolve and try to find, are there any genes using nonsense for age? And again, we find a very small number. And so for those kinds of experiments, say that this isn't, you know, that this is statistically significant. The cortex and the medulla look incredibly well correlated. There's this huge, this is like 0.6 correlated with that. This is the same gene going all the way across. So it's the same set of 447 shown in both things. Okay. This is unusual to see correlation this strong across tissues. Later on, I'm going to show you there's a little bit that's the same across different tissues. But if you look at one kind of kidney to another part of the kidney, that correlation is very strong. At first, we thought this is kind of interesting. I mean, I think it is kind of interesting because these are different types of cells than those. Yeah, it's both kidney cells. What?
The ranking of the genes is done by the cortex.
What is done by the medulla? I don't know if it's some sort of combination or if it's all ranked by the cortex. I don't know.
How many did you say that?
447.
And why did you say you're supposed to get 20?
Because 0.001 times 20,000 is 20.
Assuming that these are varying independently.
If you don't assume they're varying independently, you can model how many you should get by just permuting the data sets. So when we permute with replacement and when we permute without replacement, we don't get very many. So I'd be happy to talk to you about our statistical controls, but I think they're pretty reasonable.
I'm worried about that the variance at a given age is comparable to the trend. So for example, what I'm trying to say is like, suppose I have an alternative model and say there is no effect of aging on a healthy kidney. It's just an increased probability of having maybe 20 diseases or something like that.
Well, I think that's similar to Arnie's question, and that ultimately you could imagine that some combination of 20 diseases explains all of this stuff. And since we've only tested 16 diseases and those 16 one by one, I can't rule that out. And I do consider that significantly. But then you can't make any progress if you just allow for that possibility. And some of that stuff is part of aging, because old people have higher blood pressure than younger people. And so that is part of aging, and it's not reasonable to try to find old people with low blood pressure. I mean, at some point they are going to have plaques in their neurons and higher blood pressure. Okay? I'm just dying. This is the easy stuff. Wait till you see the experimental stuff. You want to see. Is there a moratorium?
Yeah.
Soon?
Yeah.
One more question.
No, just clarify the selection between the So you select the best correlated genes for each cortex and medulla separately, or?
Separately. Separately.
Okay, if you do it separately, then you're telling me that the best of the 447 best correlated genes are equal in both, or?
So here we're going to do the physiology. So I got to go way back. Remember, we're going to look at this person right here. Where's my thing? I'm going to look at this woman, and I'm going to look at this man, and we're going to go back and say, so that's this experiment, right? So these people are both 80. This one actually ran a marathon. This one is not running a marathon. And we have gene expression profiles that are looking different in stripes, okay? So now I'm going to test whether the genes distinguish between healthy and frail old age. Now, we're not going to look at the person. We're going to look at the kidneys. And so So
assuming the kidney is aging, nothing, you're not looking for just differential aging, right? You're not trying to find who has old kidneys but young hearts. You're just assuming that.
In the mouse experiment, so story two, I'm going to do old kidneys, young hearts. Okay? This is all kidneys.
We're trying to find the age of the person this way.
The age of the kidney, this way.
Let's try 5 minutes on that.
Okay. So, God. So, this is our score. This is the way that the pathologist sees the age of the kidney. So he looks at the glomerulus, the arteries and the tubules, and he gives it a score from 0 to 4. 0 is good, 4 is bad. And as you get older, it goes from 0 to 4 for a typical person. All right? So he looks at these things and he combines them all into one combination score that's 0 to 12. He writes those down for our kidney samples and we compare the two. All right? And so this again was the good kidney, this is the bad kidney, this had a score, perfect score. This was the worst kidney in our sample, had a score of 10. So I'm going to show you this, the combo score. Up here now is the score written down by the pathologist who knew nothing about the gene expression. Here is a score by the computer that knew nothing about the kidneys. I'm going to compare whether they agree. So I'm just going to show you by showing you closer that there really is pretty good agreement with the yellow stripe and the yellow kidney. Yellow kidney is a poor functioning kidney. Black kidney is a pretty good functioning kidney for an 80-year-old. So it's median for all kidneys, okay? So in this picture, I think it's pretty clear. Also mathematically, it's very, very clear that there's a good correlation, strong correlation, between the color of the genes and the color of the kidney. Okay? So that means that they're physiological markers of age, not just chronological. All right? That makes me feel better that these are telling us something that's linked to the process of aging. Okay? Any questions? I'm going to move to mouse. Okay. All right, so here's story number two. So we have been blessed with being able to collaborate with Kevin Becker at the NIA, who did this pretty nice mouse experiment. Is that stick around? This is now dead. Well, okay, so let me describe this mouse experiment. So he got these mice, and he let them age 1, 6, 16, or 24 months. The point of all of this is about the biggest, baddest mouse experiment there is. And it's going to have lots and lots of stuff we can look at. 4 different times of age, 10 different mice at each age. So that's a 40-mouse experiment. Every mouse was chopped up into 16 different tissues. And all 16 tissues were analyzed on arrays that have 17,000 spots on them. Okay? So it's 640 arrays in an aging time course done by one lab, one platform, actually one postdoc. And so there's an amazing amount of uniformity in the data set that allowed us, and now we're going to be able to watch things age not just in one tissue, but across many tissues in the same mouse. All right? So I want to tell you some of the things we found.
Every time they can draw about a marker, they put these everything together.
Yes. So I'll tell you what we found with global markers. So so here's an example. You take one tissue, the thymus. These are 10 mice aged 1 month, 10 mice aged 6, 10 mice 16, 10 mice 24 months. And we look for things that were going up with age or that were going down with age. There are 346 thymus genes coming through in this experiment, okay? So we did that 16 different times. So that's the thymus. The eye, we saw 256 genes, the lung, less, okay? So the point is that with the same platform, the same lab, we're getting huge differences in the amount of molecular change. This tissue shows a lot of molecular change. Thymus shows a lot of molecular change. This tissue showed very little molecular change, okay?
Is the thymus dying with age? I mean, the thymus is disappearing with age.
Great. Thymus, you're right. So the thymus is an organ that has T cells in it. And those T cells, as a mouse hits middle age, those T cells come out. So an old mouse, the thymus has no more T cells. It's actually, they call it involuted. Right? So this is probably an anatomical difference. It's not, it doesn't look at all like a young thymus. It's, and it doesn't have T cells. All right. Now again, that I'm agnostic as to the cause. This is a change that I can tell something that has a lot of T cells from something that has little T cells. That's okay for the time being. I'm just going to say that this thing changed. By that argument, this thing didn't change. By whatever mechanism, okay? Yes. Yes.
The demarcation line is
good. These, well, the demarcation line is because they have to be up and they have to be down. If they're not strongly going up, strongly go down, they don't pass our selection criteria. Each, we do linear regression on each gene for age, selecting at a p-value of 0.001. Okay, so these ones showed were going up, and these genes were going down. The slope was going up or down significantly.
I think he's asking, he's saying that if these aren't, if there's not a large amount of correlation here, you'd expect that you could segregate where it would be like half yellow, half blue up top, and half yellow, half blue on the bottom.
Why?
Because it's looking for only the ones that are
familiar. Yeah, it's the bottom and the top of the
lung. These are each individual genes. These are each individual mice. Columns are mice, rows are genes. Okay? Howley?
What are these stripes with the
ECA? So I'm going to tell you that, but it's the next experiment. I want to tell you this experiment.
Take the black 6 mouse in a single age and do 5 of them, it gives you the same results.
No, this is 10 black 6 mice, 24 months age. And so you see variable.
Are you averaging it there? Or?
No, this is an individual, no.
But that's variation within individuals who are from inbred strains at a certain age.
Certain age in the same mouse house in the same lab.
Right.
So this is noise, I guess.
That's environmental effects.
Environmental or whatever kind of effects.
Okay. Almost identical.
Exactly. That would be the argument. Okay.
Or experimental.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Tell you what. I'm going to tell you what I'm going to talk about. This is what I'm going to talk about, because you're asking, you know, one experiment, then you're asking another experiment. So I'm going to tell you about this thing, which is some change a lot, some change a little. Then I'm going to tell you about what genes are common across many different tissues. I think I wasn't, but I will now tell you about whether there's coordinate aging in the same mouse of many different organs. Then I will tell you about comparing mouse to human to fly to worm, something that you know a lot about. And then, okay? Then I'll go into the tough stuff, the new stuff. This is way too... God. Right. So this is a graph of how many genes we found changing. So the big winner was the thymus. Now, I wanted to make a couple points about this. The red line means the line where everything to the right could be just statistical noise. So when we permute the data sets and resolve, we can get this amount of stuff coming up. But we don't get this kind of stuff coming up. So this stuff has a little bit of stuff that we think is really changing with as a function of age. So you see that there's a lot of molecular change here and less molecular change here. So I think what could be interesting about this is that we can look at per tissue, and I could tell you in this mouse where the changes are occurring, and to that extent I could probably tell you where why this guy could be dying. So if I had to bet, I would say that these tissues are changing a lot, and that to the extent that they're needed for the poor mouse, that will contribute to his demise. These tissues, as far as I can tell, don't change hardly at all, and to that extent, I don't think he's probably dying because of defects here. Right? The other point, the converse, is that these don't change very much, and so in a way, these organs have figured out homeostasis throughout 2 years. So yeah, a mouse always dies in 2 years, but it's not obvious to me that the liver is going to die in 2 years. It's not obvious to me that the liver, that the mouse, whatever the liver metabolism is, it might figure out a way to stay in equilibrium for a lot longer than 2 years.
That may be very much depending like on these laboratory conditions, so on the environment. So if you start feeding these mouses alcohol, for example.
Yeah, sure. But this mouse does die in 2 years, and does not have changes in the liver.
Lots of brain on the right.
Lots of what?
Brain.
Striatum, hippocampus, cerebrum are brain. Cerebellum is brain. Spinal cord is neural tissue, so spinal cord changed. Okay?
Skin?
No, didn't do skin. It's a good idea.
Isn't kidney changing too much?
No. So I just told you about human kidney. We saw pretty good changes in human kidney and less changes. Kidney actually was just below the line for mouse changes. So I just don't know how to compare, you know, a bigger human experiment with this mouse experiment. It's again, it's a might be apples and oranges.
So this is 2 years, and that was 40 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, next point is to look at genes that are commonly changing across multiple different tissues. Okay, so as a prelude to this, I just want to consider the following experiment. Supposing you only had the thymus, and you got this thymus data. So this is 10 different 1-month-old thymuses and 10 different 6-month-old thymuses. And these are the gene expression levels. If you know the gene expression changes, you could write down the slope. So this is a summary of that. This is the slope. These are the expression levels. So if you only looked at the thymus, could you gain knowledge about some other tissue? And so you'd like to see, does this predict results from other tissue? And we did all tissues by all tissues to find out how much they do. But here's an example. So this is the results from the thymus. And then I'll show you what happens if we look at the same genes picked out because of here and simply plot their slope here. And this showed a pretty good agreement. So if it was going up with age here, it's going up with age here. Same for going down, okay?
What do you mean by slope expression?
So this is increase of expression per year. Okay, so this is going up in expression and this is going down in expression. Slope with respect to age. Okay? Okay. This is a table that shows all the pairs of tissues that shows correlations in the age-related slopes. And I showed you the big winner, but there are some other ones that show correlations. You can, another way to do this, so this gave us courage to go and look for genes that changed not in just one tissue, but changed in multiple tissues, possibly all tissues, but it had to change in multiple tissues. So we developed, Art Owen, a professor of statistics who collaborates with us, developed methods to search for genes that change across multiple tissues. And so here are those genes, and this is their slope with respect to age, that were selected because they changed in multiple different tissues. Actually, in the 9 tissues that showed age regulation, they changed in more than one of those 9 tissues. So here are genes that go up in multiple tissues, and here are genes that go down in multiple tissues. Then you can take these results and you can cluster the tissues according to who they share and who they don't share in common. And we found 3 patterns of mouse aging. So one of the clusters was this heart, spleen, lung cluster, which we call a vascular cluster. The other cluster is the thymus, gonad, adrenal cluster, which we call glandular. And the last one was the neural cluster over here, right? So this kind of data makes us think that it's like there are 3 kind of clocks going on in the mouse, 3 different patterns, and that the organs are aging in different sorts of ways. So we've begun to look at the specific genes and pathways that are different between these sorts of things. But it's as if, you know, an old mouse is is reporting simultaneously on three different clocks. And it could be old because this clock is really old. These two may not have to be old, and vice versa. Okay? Yes, and this sort of thing, it's they sort of co-support ourselves because now we're looking at. I think this is 340, 320 different genes were in this heat map. Those 300 or so genes were used to cluster these nine tissues. Okay, we have done this many different ways, and this dendrogram falls out consistently with many, many different ways of selecting different genes. So we have taken genes, we've taken gene sets, we've taken all sorts of rules to pull out genes. And this pattern is pretty reproducible. Okay?
Is there a way to correlate with, separate whether or not this is, the correlation is more strong with a person or with the age? In other words, is it one of your particular mice that's old age, right? Could have its heart, spleen, and lung.
All right. So that's a lot like Hao Li's experiment. So let me just tell you that experiment. So, but I took out the slide. So there are 10 mice that are 24 months old, and we looked in each of those mice, and let's say we looked at the heart of each of those, and we could use this kind of data and say, who had the oldest heart? Then we would ask, did that mouse also have the oldest thymus, oldest liver, oldest, right? And so we ranked the mice according to who had the oldest heart and who had the oldest liver and who had the oldest thymus. So every mouse has a ranking of its tissue, 1 to 10, on where it was in the among its cohort. And we saw a correlation of ranks. So there was a significant deviation from random, and that we saw mice that were consistently young and consistently old across multiple different tissues. Okay? So that shows coordination across the mouse.
There's also implies that all of these mages are the same range or something like that. I'm looking that the mouse who was in the corner breathing bad air
is
different from the mouse who's in the other.
Right.
And so, I would have thought that different organs could age in the same mouse.
Well, that result is still true. I'm just saying that there was some evidence of coordination. It wasn't like 100%.
People usually die of, many people die,
heart
disease,
cancer,
So there's a variance of what fails in the population and death.
Yeah.
That's another way to measure this.
Right.
But you find a stronger correlation.
No, I can't really compare how much is variance to how much is correlation. All I did is we said that there is some evidence that there is some correlation. There's still lots of individual variation.
Can I go back to that question? If you have 10 mice, and you just take one tissue, and 10 mice are 2 years, what's the variance in this gene expression profile you get there? I mean, how homogeneous is it that all these genes are on or off or up or down? Or is it a distribution as well with a large or a small variance?
Okay, I think I see what you're saying. So if you would have...
Reproducibility of mice that lived for 2 years in a cage and now give a pattern, right? So I just want to know how reproducible they are. For this pattern, because that if they were very reproducible, it'd be great. Because then this pattern would tell you that it's a function of aging.
Well, I can tell you experiments we did, not with this because this was all the one lab, but we compared, I told you about human kidney. We compared our human kidney to a second study in my lab on human muscle, and we could see a common pattern. And we compared those two to a study in Harvard on human brain. And so, and then again, there's a common pattern of genes that changes similarly across three different tissues, three different studies, two different labs. So that starts to make me feel like, it's not some crazy kind of artifact, and that But I think your examples are well, especially with the human experiments, which are less controlled. Okay, so now I want to talk about comparing between different species. So Holly has done this with flies and worms, and we now have this mouse data that I just told you, and I told you about the kidney data, and I can tell you that we also have muscle and brain data to look at gene expression changes across age. This data on worms came from my lab. The data on fly aging came from Scott Pletcher's study in Drosophila. Now, the way we looked at this is we looked at entire sets of genes that change as a pathway. So that's called gene set expression analysis. And an example is this. This is a GO biological process called the ribosomal cluster. There are 85 ribosomal genes. And written here is the slope of each of these genes with respect to age in human muscle, kidney, and brain. And what you see is that these tend to be yellow. They're not all yellow. Some of them are blue. But what this algorithm does is it searches and it finds and it says that this is more yellow than you should expect by chance. So it pulls this up as a yellowish, overall yellow pathway, yellow, yellow, yellow. Okay? So that is the type of analysis that we did. And it's much more sensitive than looking at one gene at a time because there's a reasonable amount of noise in this stuff. We looked at 624 gene sets, and we were able to find these 22 pathways that change commonly between human and mouse. And of those 22, one of them changed commonly in flies, and one of them changed commonly in all four organisms, up through the worm. This one is the electron transport chain, which is a pathway that Hao Li had previously found in his study. So here's that data. This guy goes down with age in humans, mouse, flies, and worms. And this thing, you may know, is the guy that makes free radicals. So it's a pathway that generates free radicals and hydrogen peroxide, free radicals and hydrogen peroxide. And this results in molecular damage. It's the center of the oxidative theory of aging. And what we're finding is that these genes go down with age in all the different species. So that's interesting because there's a 5,000-fold difference in lifespan, and yet this pathway goes down 5,000 times, it goes down in scales with lifespan. So in thinking that sense, this is an exceptionally good marker for age because it's almost unavoidable no matter how the animals are aging. Okay. The next experiment is a little bit different. So what I just did is I said, I'm only going to tell you the one pathway or the 22 pathways that are the same in human and mouse. All right? I'm going to do this experiment. I want to say, if you studied the mouse data, do you gain any information about how humans age and vice versa? So, and this is analogous to a slide I showed you earlier, but this is results from a mouse, from the mouse, and then we're going to say if it's pretty yellow in the mouse, is it pretty yellow in the human? And then I'm just going to graphically plot out the results for every single gene or for every single gene pathway. We get the same result, okay? Okay, so this is what I told you before. I told you about the blue genes that were up in the human and up in the mouse. So this is the mouse aging. This is the human aging. And so this goes up and this goes down and down. But this is what you look at if you start to look at all of the genes that are age regulated in one of the two different organisms. And it's symmetric. All right? So this thing bothers me greatly. Let me tell you why. Supposing you're studying the mouse here, and you do 600 different arrays in the mouse, and you find all of these genes that go up with age in the mouse, and all of these genes that go down with age in the mouse, and it's a fair amount of work. And then you go and somebody does the same experiment in the human. Well, your gene that goes up in the mouse might have gone up in the human, but it had as much chance to go down in the human. There was no correlation. There was no predictive value. So yes, there are some things that happen to go up and up, but there was overall there was no predictive value. This goes back to that slide I showed earlier that said we're looking outside the force of natural selection. This says that there wasn't much the same between old mice and old human at the molecular level when we looked at it. So there are lots of ways you can sort of wiggle out of that stuff, but right now that's the data we have. This is true for genes. This is true for gene sets. This is true for, if you look at all of the tissues, this looks true if you look at single tissues against each other.
There are organ systems which have really been studied well in all organisms, but of vertebrates, like the immune system.
Uh-huh.
Which declines in efficiency with age.
Uh-huh.
So the kidney, which declines in efficiency with age, right? So why wouldn't there be genes that you would have detected that would be more universal if there is an organ system failing as a percentage of lifespan? Not chronologically, right? So in the mouse, in the lifespan,
right.
The immune system declines in efficiency in the human in the last quarter of their lifespan. It's independent of chronological age, but percentage of lifespan, the immune system declines, right?
Right. So this is scaled for lifespan. So this is already scaled for that. Now, we did do kidney versus kidney, mouse kidney versus human kidney. Looks just like this. So, you know, there are still ways to wiggle out of that stuff. I mean, basically, you have to argue that the experiments aren't yet powerful enough to show the overlap. But we saw very, very little overlap, even though I can easily see overlap between human kidney and human muscle. So then, you know, whether or not you should or shouldn't, that's like a philosophical way. I'd be happy to, you know, chat with you about whether I expect to or not.
Maybe it says something like that microarrays don't see the reason why organs fail with age.
Oh, that's possible. That's possible. This is only one way. Yeah. Absolutely. This is only one way.
I would have thought that if organ systems fail as a function of age, as a percentage of lifespan, that there would be some reflection of the gene expression
profile. Yeah. So, you know, I think the opposite. I think the, whatever reason an organ fails, you know, it could be enzymatic or functional, whatever reason that is, the transcription, there will be a transcriptional readout of that. And that would be embedded in the transcriptional profile we have, even though it itself is not a cause. So, you know, we're about to get into a philosophical argument, because I think you're asking whether, you know, somebody designed a car to last 2 years and somebody designed a car to last 80 years and you look at 2x beyond the warranty, would you expect to see the same engineering failures?
What I'm saying is chronological age isn't the right measure. I'm saying that as a percentage of lifespan, organ systems are known to fail about the same rates and ways. So that I might have expected some cellular or molecular or other problems.
Susanna.
To me, it seems like one of the big differences is that to the extent that we are still under selection as humans, the human example went through all the color. And your mouse sample did not. And so some of the differences that you see may be what happens when you fail to remove the individuals that. So in the human sample, you're looking at what's the expression level in individuals that are going to make it to whatever that age is under normal circumstances. And in the mouse data set, you're looking at let's remove everything that they normally go through and then ask what their expression is. So it's a very different question.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about that afterwards. Excuse me? No. This is a gene filter platform, and this is a affymetrix platform. Okay, so now we're going into the new stuff. So this is what you can do. You can take and do many, many human microarrays, and if you have 100 microarrays or hundreds of microarrays, and you look at all of the genes, you can say what gene is correlated with what other gene. You can use this to make a network. So this is a gene and that's a gene. It's like a node. And an edge means that they're correlated in this gene expression data set, okay? So we're going to try to look at age at the network level. So the idea would be to do 100 microarrays on the old Jim Watson, do the same data set, now not look for genes that go up or down, but look for changes in correlation. So maybe there are less edges. Maybe these edges are weaker than they were over here, okay? So I'm going to tell you about an edge here. If it gets weaker, I'll call it a red edge. It gets looser. If it gets tighter, I'll call it a green edge, okay? And then we're going to look at the changes in the whole network structure as this network ages to this network. And now it's the same genome. So we could do that in the mouse. So I have 160 arrays from one age and 160 arrays from another age, and they're the same experiment from the same lab. And so we constructed two networks, one from the young mouse, one from the old mouse, and we're going to compare the difference in the network topology between the young and the old network. All right? So this is the data from the younger mouse. This is the data from the older mouse. And what we did is we found genes that were a cluster based on some third age. So these are all co-clustered, co-expressed genes. Take this cluster and look at their correlations in younger age and older age and see where the correlations get looser or the correlations get stronger. Okay? So this is going to be basically whether the whole network is rattling apart, not just specific genes are changing expression. This is how we actually selected genes that are red and genes that are edges that are red and edges that are green. So first we made Spearman correlations, and once we made Spearman correlations, we get a normal distribution. That allowed us to compare the young minus old ranks and then determine whether that difference in the ranks was significant in this thing. So we could now pull out things that were significantly red and significantly green. And so what we found were two things. The first thing is that we did find things that were changing, getting looser, things that were getting tighter. There's a lot more of it is getting looser than is getting tighter. So the older mice were loosening their edges more than they were tightening their edges. So I think that makes intuitive sense. The other thing I can tell you, but I don't have a slide to show you, is that the edges that are red are clustered on the network. So it's not like there's an even degeneration of the fabric of the network, that there are specific regions that seem to be degenerating more rapidly than other regions of the gene co-expression network. Here are two clusters, two examples. So there are 26 genes in this cluster. These genes are, and every gene-gene pair is shown as red or black or blue, depending on whether it's getting looser or getting tighter. Red is looser. So this is a cluster that overall is getting looser. This is the electron transport chain cluster, something we've talked about before. This is a cluster that's getting tighter in the old mouse. So that's non-intuitive, that the old mice actually has better regulation of these 100 genes than the young mouse. But these guys are DNA damage repair genes. So we think that in the old mouse, it's being hit with stresses that it doesn't see in the younger mouse. And those stresses induce regulation in the old mouse that allows for more regulation, more correlation in the old mouse than the younger mice.
So is there larger variation in their expression of those genes than in the older mouse? Or
in the older mice, there would be tighter co-variation of those genes.
Right.
You want to know the variation of one individual gene.
Right.
I don't know that.
Or the variation from younger mouse also. So are these guys all turning out?
I do know that the correlation of one array to another array within a cohort is about the same between young and old mice. It's not very different. The next thing we asked is, where the heck is this correlation coming? Where is this loosening coming from? So you can split up this red into each of the different organs, and you can say, is it getting red because of the brain or the spleen or the kidney? And so we split up the score according to each of the different, so these are the different tissues, and dark blue means that that tissue contributed a lot to the loosening of the link. And so for this particular link, let's say this is a whole cluster. The whole cluster is dark blue, and that shows that these are the tissues that cause this cluster to rattle apart. And that's one cluster. This is another way to show it using SVD. So here's a cluster that I think is falling apart because of some sort of loss of regulation in the brain. So cerebellum, hippocampus, striatum, and spinal cord are all the neural tissues. And that's where the big signal is in loss of this cluster, of all of these genes in that cluster. Okay? Yeah.
When you say correlation between genes, do you only mean just positive correlation, or do you also include negative correlation?
Only positive. We haven't included negative yet.
So you don't know if negative correlation increases or decreases
with each? I don't know. We could do that. But we haven't included that. Okay, well, that was the story. So the first two stories were done by Jacob Zahn, grad student in the lab. Last one is done by Lucy Southworth, who is also grad student in the lab. Thanks. Yeah, we have. So we looked at Clotho. I don't happen to remember off the top of my head. Of course, I looked at DAF2, which is a C. elegans aging gene. It codes the insulin-like growth factor receptor. DAF2 goes down in kidney aging. And loss of function DAF2 makes flies and worms, maybe mice, live longer. There's another one that I like called Mortalin. Mortalin is a chaperone. And as a chaperone, it allows proteins to, it maintains protein folding. And this Mortalin, if you overexpress it in tissue culture, it extends the lifespan of cells in culture. Well, that thing goes down in old people. So that would be bad for you. There's a way of thinking about the DAF2 result that makes it seem good for you, that you're inducing caloric restriction in old age. Okay?
How do you see the processes of aging between human and mice? I'm curious how appropriate or inappropriate it is to assume 2 years old mice and 80 years old human.
Well, that was that cluster gram, so we saw no correlation between human and mouse.
I mean, not only genes, but in general.
Oh. That depends, you know. So I talk with my mouse friends about whether an old mouse looks like an old human.
You know what we're laughing
at? I have lots of friends who are mice. Mickey and Minnie, is that what? So I think it's a little bit complicated, you know, about whether or not. There are definitely some things, but if you look at it carefully, there are differences in the way the animals age. I don't happen to work on mice, so I'm not a very good expert. I think they're you know, if you looked at different organs, there are definitely things that are the same, but there are things that, you know, seem different too.
So the black sex mouse is an interesting mouse. The females live at the 50% point of death.
Uh-huh.
The females live to 2.6, two years, 6 months. The males live 2 years, 1 month. So there's actually an interesting difference in aging as a percentage, and that's a significant percentage of lifespan, that's 5 months.
And then, of course, they die of certain diseases in black sex. They get lung cancer more often than they get other cancers, while other mice get other cancers. So they do have genetic predispositions to aging in a tissue or in an organ-specific way. And I would hope to uncover that, and I would hope to uncover the differences between males and females. This, I mean, almost in all species, females live longer than males. There are a couple of exceptions, but almost in all species. And that that's a great way to start magnifying aging experiments, it seems to me, because here you have two people of the same species, and yet there are reproducible longevity differences.
But it's not just longevity. The mortality rate for males is consistently higher than for females all the way through their life.
Correct.
So it may not be an aging-specific thing. Maybe being a male.
There are motorcycle accidents and things, which all people out there are on motorcycles. But
no, it's still three to four times higher in 20-year-olds. In males, three to four times higher mortality rate in males.
But there are also differences in cancers and things. Yes. There are a lot of differences. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting comparison. It's the point I would make. Mm-hmm. There, but I also think that there's been a rather extensive group of physiological studies on aging that demonstrate that different organs age at different rates, that different as a percentage of maximum efficiency. Defining maximum efficiency at the time at which you're childbearing years, which presumably has evolutionary significance, and that the different people have organs that decline at different rates, and that some people decline in their respiratory capabilities at a very fast rate, and other people in their urinary capabilities or their kidney capabilities and things. So I'm surprised to find, I think there should have been individual, I hope there would be individual markers that would allow one to see that. And the nicest thing would be to see that at age 20, so that you know the person has renal propensity for renal effects, so that they'd be the early marker.
Well, I can tell you later on, if you'd like to chat, our plan to try to find markers that we can use at age 20 to predict your future, your future aging profile. I think we have some experiments trying to get. Yeah, it's doing similar things to what you're doing. Joel?
Can you defend the use of transcriptional profiling as a measure of aging, given that there's no correlation between two mammalian species? So it's true, I guess, in one species this could be useful markers if I wanted to find out how likely it is I'm going to live to a certain age. But that's about as far as it's going to go. If we want to understand anything about the progress of aging, wouldn't you say your results really show that transcriptional profiling is not going to do it for you? At least
no, it's not, but I would say the opposite. I think transcriptional profiling is a reasonable way to mark age, and that mouse aging and human aging, the process of aging, are different. So I think the actual word is out as to whether a gene that causes longevity in one species causes longevity in another species. I think if you take a real look at and you try to divest it from strong pressures to actually see differences, I think it's still unclear whether you can expect
stress,
something.
Or insulin growth signaling, or
so insulin growth signaling in mouse is unclear, I would think, right? And so if you look at SIRT2 in worms, SIRT2 in mouse, is a little bit backwards. There are lots of things that don't look so clear.
Correlations between yeast and worms and flies are pretty good.
Not for the knockouts, not that I can see. If you look at we can talk about this later. But you can either say that mouse and human for sure age the same way, and therefore the transcriptional profiles isn't seeing what I want. Or you can say the transcriptional profile, you could say the transcriptional profiles are all noise. That's possible. Or you could say that they're different, and that I have to allow for the possibility that an old person and an old mouse are different.
So you'd have to say that aging processes are dramatically different in two species that
I think so.
Diverged not that long ago, really.
They diverged long enough ago. I mean, The evolutionary biologists will swear by it, and I'm starting to believe that a lot of what they say is has merit.
What?
That aging occurs outside the force of natural selection. And so the events that occurred at year two in a mouse, as a mouse lost its predation, I don't know, I mean, as the mouse evolved to a human, and now we have no predators, that events that occur at year 60 have any relationship to events that occur year two. That's an evolutionary theory. We can talk about that too later on. That's a long time.
Biology is so similar. Mouse and human biology is so similar.
Possibly not with aging.
DNA repair mechanisms, oxidative control.
Absolutely. Cell cycle and RAS signaling, all that sort of stuff, but not aging. It's different. It's outside the force. It's like astrobiology. it's a virtual machine that hasn't existed on the world before.
If it's not plastic, it should be very easily manipulated.
And it is. It's very easily manipulated.
Can you do that for me soon, please?
I'm curious about whether you actually selected some of your genes to control for highly expressed versus lowly expressed versus tissue-specific genes. And you may find
we did not bias at all for high express or low express. We did look at the expression levels after we got them. And there wasn't a bias, so we got rare message and abundant message about the same rate.
But then, would you expect, for example, a tissue like the brain or the kidney or at least the retina, but not the eye, maybe globally, but the tissues that are more dependent on high metabolic rates and oxidative damage to have similar expression profiles to a more sort of low metabolic rate tissue?
Could be. Do you know the metabolic rates of all the different tissues in the mouse?
No.
We could. I don't either. So, you know, we did cluster the mouse tissues. And so we saw glandular, vascular, and neural. And if that correlates with the metabolic rate, then yes. But I think muscle has very high metabolic rate. I don't know. Maybe neural tissue does too. So those two things look different. They look very different.
So how would you explain that? I mean, there's still, I mean, what other factor is so important on top of the metabolic rate that is sort of responsible for the separation versus some tissues?
So we're trying to figure that out. So we are looking hard at the reasons why the tissues are different in the way that they age. So the neural pattern versus the glandular pattern. So one of the big differences is in ribosomal gene expression. It goes up in neural tissue, goes down in glandular tissue. So that might help explain the difference in patterns of aging.
There's a very popular hypothesis that metabolic rate determines lifespan. The mouse has tenfold the metabolic rate of the human and lives 2.5 years, and the human lives 70 years, 80 years, whatever. That's a little more than 10, but you could say there's some nonlinear function. However, that argument, that metabolic rate determines lifespan, crashes, because there's some birds that live to 60 or 70 years old that have the same metabolic rate as the mouse, and bats live to 50 years old and they have the same metabolic rate as the mouse. So it's not metabolic rate. It might be metabolic rate plus the repair systems you need for the high metabolic rate. But whatever, but this mouse doesn't have extraordinary repair systems compared to humans. Yeah. So the notion that metabolic rate correlates with lifespan has too many exceptions.
So I wasn't just thinking about lifespan per se, but when you look at the clustering of tissues, then there is no obvious correlation.
But the tissue that makes it the most...
But then the genes that come up have to do with metabolic activity. That's the correlation that I cannot sort of place in my head. I mean, you come up with the metabolic pathway, but the tissues that are known to be high in metabolic activity don't cluster together. That's
so it just means that it's not metabolic activity. It's something else that is driving.
But she's talking about your data. She's saying that you are finding the pathway that spits out reactive oxygen is popping out of your data. I think that's what she's referring to. Not this argument of...
Oh, I see.
There's a theoretical argument that metabolic rate makes a difference. She's actually talking about your data.
So I'm saying that the electron transport chain goes down with age...
Yeah.
across many different tissues. But that was most pronounced in the glandular tissue, I believe. And it wasn't. You're talking about the total. You're talking about the expression level, not the change in expression level with respect to age. I think it's a little bit different.
The complication. So any organism actually is divided up into whether or not they require insulin to take up glucose or not. But, so that immediately partitions your two organs, right? So muscle and heart and intestine and kidney and so forth require that, and lymphocytes don't require it, brain doesn't require it. And then in the liver, the metabolic rate is extraordinarily high just because you generate a lot of ATP from oxidative phosphorylation. So it's those organs that take up glucose by insulin and have glucose transporters that are regulated by the insulin pathway that would have high metabolic rate. And other organs have high metabolic rate. I mean, to make antibodies, that the rate you make antibodies, it has to have a higher metabolic rate, but completely different pathway that regulates that metabolic rate. So
I have a question, Bruce?
The heterogeneity is a great problem. I mean, we don't know enough to interpret these data, in my opinion.
So speaking of heterogeneity, I guess my concern would be, I can imagine that certain cell types, as you know, stem cells, could be responsible for much of the aging phenotype, while contributing fairly little, mRNA to the rate.
No, absolutely. Again, I'm not really talking about cause of aging. So this is all correlation. These are all just markers. Really, I'm just talking about phenotypes and saying, is this phenotype looking like that phenotype? So the cause of why something gets old could be a little stem cell in all of these different tissues, or it could be some sort of post-mitotic degeneration of the whole tissue. So your point is well taken. You know, we have sorted long-term bone marrow stem cells in mouse and watched those things age. And we have a paper, we have a mouse paper on that. They're kind of interesting. So for those bone marrow stem cells, there are three times more bone marrow stem cells, maybe five times more bone marrow stem cells in an old mouse, but they work three times less well. But overall, there's more stem cell activity in old mouse than a young mouse, because the numbers increase is bigger than the functional decrease. So it's not so simple.
I don't think you can tell us from your study, but there may be studies that address this. I can think of one in worms that has, to some extent. Can you ask if the variation between individuals at a certain age, if that same variation is maintained across their age? So, for example, guys that look like they're aging more at an early stage continue to show that coherently throughout their age, or are they bouncing up and down in terms of their these markers? So in worms, for example, if you look at HSP16 expression, for example, you can anticipate what the lifespan of the worm's going to be if you look at its expression even fairly early on.
Yeah, we haven't done that longitudinal study. You could do it in a worm. I could look at expression every day, and say if it's low on day on Tuesday, is it low on day on Wednesday? And I suspect it will be. You know, maybe it'll, I don't know. We haven't done it.
Maybe we should thank Stuart and